Good evening, welcome along to the Tuesday Club as we look forward to this week. No, we don't. Anyway. The Tuesday Club is brought to you in association with RedsBet, a betting site tailor-made for Liverpool supporters. RedsBet aims to share half of the net profits with Liverpool supporters and fan causes, so no matter what, the fans always end up a winner. Check out the odds on RedsBet.com or download the RedsBet app. Share the glory and gamble responsibly. Anyway, in tonight I've got Dave Thomas, I've got Ray Dicko Dickinson, and I've got Paddy Lawson beside me. We're going to be looking at the end of the season. We're going to be talking about the latest transfer rumours. We're going to be looking at the madness that's been involved in getting to Kiev to this final, and the price. Although we are thinking of setting up our own travel agency that specialises in football packages. Imagine. Thomas Crook. We'll wrap it up with a look towards the Champions League final. Everyone, this is the one thing that's on our top. We've got top four in the bag and the whole lot. We'll kick it off anyway, and then I'll come back to the RedsBet thing when I look it up on the email here.
In your notes.
And what happens is then in the edit I'll move it around so it looks like it's seamless. Right?
Slick.
But anyone that's watching on the Periscope, of course, will see what's really going on.
Pretty amateur
reality.
Stuff.
Yeah, listen, pretty amateur stuff will be professional at our level.
Amateur stuff is our website.
That's the other website.
Pornhub/Patreon.
You're on there, are you? Paddy, that's your support. Dave Thomas,
yes.
Great to have you back in the thing. And it is the end of season, so top four in the bag.
Yeah.
We managed to get the win over Brighton, which was easy in the end. And Newcastle did us the favour, which we probably wouldn't have expected had Chelsea not dropped the points during the week. All in all, Dave, look, we'll go through it as we get into it, but it is mission accomplished, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. There was a point on Sunday where I was still going, it's only an 8-goal swing that needs and we're fucked. Like, Chelsea score 4 and Brighton score 4. Fuck.
We're done, bollocks.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
We always make hard work of these things. I mean, the reality is we should have had it in a bag a little bit before. We should have finished higher. And I think if we hadn't had the Champions League final, I think we would have made a push for... obviously, we would have finished third. I think we would have pushed for second, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think any of us would swap second for not being in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
So it was a very good season. And I think that, you know, it's interesting to look back in hindsight at some of the things that Klopp did during the season that he got pelters for that actually ended up paying off. Three that spring to mind. One is waiting for Van Dijk.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the rotation that he did over the Christmas period.
Yeah.
And the third one is obviously letting Coutinho go and not buying anyone. I think that not that all of them... in particular the Coutinho one about not replacing him, I'm not sure that was his preference, but as it happens... The fact that he managed to get this team with those things to the Champions League final and into the top four, and not just into the top four in the Champions League final, I mean, blowing teams away.
Yeah.
Probably the best attacking side. I think this team is a better attacking side than 2013-14.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And they're a joy to watch. And, you know, I'll finish on Salah, and I'm sure we'll talk about him. But Salah scored 32 goals in the season, and he missed the highest number of expected goals at 23. So,
and a lot of them in the first few weeks.
He could arguably have scored.
Was that XG2A or was it XG1?
To be honest with you, it was XG extra.
Oh,
that I was looking at.
XGX.
Whoa! But I think it was something like 23 either XG or big chances or whatever that he missed. So if he could shoot, he'd actually would have scored
already,
15 goals this season.
Okay.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Ray Dicko Dickinson, yeah. Talk to me about your thoughts. Just a brief summary of how you feel at the end of this season.
Well, went the game.
Went the game.
Started.
Went the game.
Went the game.
Did you not, go to the game? You went to the game.
And I was sitting there first sort of 15 minutes or so going to myself, I'm so glad we don't actually have to win this game, because there were a few nerves there initially. I didn't think we started like a house on fire or anything like that. I think we were playing within ourselves to an extent. Brighton were kind of there for the taking. It was fairly obvious. But as the minutes passed by, I was just thinking to myself, well, at least we don't have to win this game. But of course, once the first goal goes in, the second goal goes in, it was comfortable enough.
Mane tortures you, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah. Man. I mean, that, you know, the chance that he misses, and then obviously he's trying to set Salah up, and you know, so yeah, I mean, look, we made the breakthrough a bit later than we probably deserved to, and we were 2-0 up at half time, should have been more, but look, the second half was just like thoroughly enjoyable when you know that it's done and dusted.
Yeah,
you're 45 minutes to sit in the sunshine, everything feels great, you know, it was a great day out, it really was. And I agree with Dave. I think if we don't have the Champions League run, we finish probably second.
Mm.
It was great seeing that clip of the United fan basically saying,
that made me more direct.
We may as well have finished fourth and then start and proceed to sort of lose it completely. So it is, at the end of the day, we don't have to go through that qualification now by finishing fourth. Mm. So in a way, it's perfect. And I think it was a massive gamble that was taken in a way by not replacing Coutinho. But having said that, we did bring Ox in January, and he's actually made a contribution that I think has helped get us to where we are now. So, look, it's onwards and upwards, isn't it? And we can go to war, hopefully, in the summer in terms of transfers, bring in those four or five players, and not have to worry about selling something to players, because it's there for everyone to see. Yeah.
Plus, we don't need to. There is no real risk over any of our first team squad that we don't want to lose. You know, Salah's not going to go. Firmino, Mane's not going to go. There's no one where Emery Can. Okay, we know the issue is there, but apart from that, like, there's no one you're going, God, if we lost them, that's a big haul.
LL Paddy L of the Lawsons, it's great to have you. Like, Paddy became a regular because Shawnee basically just his head exploded in the second half of the season. So we had to get a Lawson.
So we upgraded.
Yeah, we brought Paddy.
We had to alternate.
Sometimes you get like two Lawsons for a price of one.
It was like that whole thing, the job share, wasn't it?
Yeah.
These lads have become our job
share. It's the Trippers version. Paddy comes in for the away legs. The man does the
whole thing. He has a dodgy knee and all.
It's like when your man Kevin Spacey got done and they had to bring that other family. Yeah.
They're not Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. You know, you can say that.
To redo it,
Paddy, look, given that you only really exist from halfway through the year, a bit like Chelsea only existed since 2005, right? So, yeah. What was your take on the season since February?
Oh, man. Hang on, I'll just get me phone out.
Since the window. Since we brought you in the window.
Yeah.
Hello. I think my fee was 3.5 million bottles of beer, which is yet to be paid in full.
Trade creditors of 90 days.
Yes.
All about installments, Paddy. All about installments.
Listen, I take weekly installments, very weekly. But now, for me, like, the big thing I've got from this season, especially after January when Coutinho went, was that we were saying here a few weeks ago that the trust that we have for the manager now is unrivaled. If he wants to fucking bring back Ricky Lambert, I don't think we'd question him.
It'd be worth it for the pod alone.
It'd be worth it just to have somebody on the pod who scored more goals in Anfield than him.
But no, like, it's just. But the levels we've gone up in the last few months, like, a big question for us over the start of the season and coming up to January was the goalkeeper. It was our biggest Achilles heel. Van Dijk came in, steadied the ship, made Lovren. I think he brought Lovren on a bit as well.
Could be.
Robinson was told, I think Robinson had an interview where he said he spoke to Klopp, and Klopp turned around and said, look, you're just not right at the moment. Let your bet in a little bit more, and look how good he's been. He's probably been one of the best fullbacks in the league. Without a shadow of a doubt. Alexander-Arnold is another 19-year-old kid, a child. And he's taking on the likes of Sane, and he's, as he said, I think an interview I seen today, he's actually sees it as an honour playing against Ronaldo. And that's the good thing about the team. The team is young, the team is stepping on, and from February, I think a little blip when City beat us that time in the Etihad when Mane was sent off, I think that kind of put a dampener on how our season was going, because I think if we had a beat City or drawn with City, I think we would have kicked on. I think it kind of took the wind out of our sails and made us reevaluate things. But after February, I think we evolved,
a lot of what Paddy's saying there is it shows that we evolved as the season went on. You know, a lot of what we were doing, you know, the players who were contributing I know Salah contributed all season, but a lot of the other players seem to kind of step up in that second half of the season. We were kind of almost unrecognisable from the first, certainly the first sort of 8 to 10 games with what we ended up with towards the back end of the season. And I think you got to give the manager credit for recognising, particularly, it took a while, but the weakness with the goalkeeper was sorted. He brought his man who he sort of stuck to his guns on in January. And he obviously seen something in Ox that a lot of us didn't see or didn't sort of get at the time, but I think he's kind of been vindicated in that one as well. Yeah.
Well, I think what's interesting about the season when you look back is how many individual players have had a journey. So even Coutinho, who obviously isn't here anymore.
Well, he did because he went to Barcelona.
He had a great journey.
There's worse journeys to take, right?
But he's going to win the Champions League winner's medal, though.
If you think about Klopp in September, right? He's got a player who just had his dream move turned down, and he gets the best half of the season out of Coutinho than the Coutinho ever had.
In
Liverpool,
his most consistent run of form.
Right. You know, go right the way down to Karius. I mean, this is a goalkeeper, and I've been on pods where I've criticised Klopp for the chopping and changing of the goalkeepers, but he brought them in at the right time because he had a nice little run of games where he didn't really have too much to do, got his confidence back, and now, I mean, let's be honest, I don't think anyone would be an uproar if we went into the new season with him as a number one.
Well, we are going into the new season as number one. Yeah. I think it's quite obvious that we don't have any designs to have somebody else.
Exactly. And the money it would take to upgrade
him. Exactly, that's the thing, isn't it?
We would be better spent somewhere else. Listen, I want to start to bring it back just a wee bit, but before I do, what is the highlight of the season for you, Dave Thomas?
I think that the beating City in the second leg of the Champions League quarterfinal, semifinal, whatever it was. Quarter. So beating City, that second game, getting to half time at 1-0, and then Salah scoring. I don't think I've ever felt as jubilant about a goal as since probably Istanbul. I mean, it was just unbelievable that we beat them there. Yeah. Not just won the tie, beat them there. And played really well and smart. So that's the one that always kind of jumps out to me when Salah, because it's a great goal as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great goal. Great finish. And the other one is, again, against City, is Firmino's chip, where he does the Fowler-type finish, elbows Otamendi up the way, and bends it over Edison. I thought that was a sheer moment of class, like that summed up what we're like as a team. And Firmino actually is probably the epitome of that team. So I think, but beating City the second leg, I mean, I watched the first half, and I don't know about you guys, but I feel like the first half went on for about 3 hours.
I must have
sweated about 8 pints.
We were here. Ridiculous. Yeah. I remember saying to Ray, like, all we need to do is get to half time. Yeah. If we get to half time here and not concede again,
that second,
we're in a good place, because they really have to come at us in the second half.
But there was an article today where they detailed what Klopp said at half time there, and apparently what he said, so Lovren went mad today, and then Klopp said, because Oxlade-Chamberlain just missed a good chance, and Klopp said to him,
that was the warning, wasn't it?
City are in there now shitting themselves because they've remembered what you can do, and if we score one, that's it, it's over. And apparently that's what he said in the chain room. So it's amazing that, like, these little moments, these little things that change the season, like, because if Sané's goal stands, it's a different conversation.
And it was one-way traffic up until that point. Oxlade-Chamberlain reminds them, hang on,
it's not that.
There's a danger here.
There's a big danger.
Yeah.
The goal!
My highlight. It's the 4-3, to be honest with you, against City in the league.
In the league?
Yeah, because I think that sets the scene almost for, obviously we end their unbeaten run in the league, which was quite sweet. And it was a 4-1 win, actually, wasn't it? Let's not get away from the fact those last couple of goals make it closer than it really was. We absolutely blitzed them that day, and I think that's the point at which we start to get into Pep's head, and he's got a decision to make how he plays against us when he comes up against us in the Champions League, and he's not changing his game plan, and ultimately we take advantage of them, and that, I think that sets us up great for future seasons, for next season and beyond, when we've got to come up against them.
I think that's a really interesting point that Jen thought of, that beating them so comprehensively gets into his head. Yeah. Because suddenly he's got a decision to make. Yeah. Do I change?
Yeah.
Or do I? And I think that little bit of indecision in the first game. Yeah.
So that's my highlight. On top of that, another highlight has been Firmino's no look finishes as well.
Yeah.
That's been quality. I don't know if it was picked up on camera on Sunday, but at one point, I think it was in the second half, he was literally sort of just in front of where I sit, and he did like a no look pass.
It was
picked up. I mean, he's just you know, he's so cheeky.
He did the no look contract signing.
Yeah, no look contract signing.
That's my highlight of the season.
That's the no look contract signing.
So hopefully he didn't look at any of the classes as well. So I did. He just signed him. Yeah, 10 grand a week. No, ten.
So I guess the emergence of him as a real fan favourite has been a highlight as well.
Paddy Lawson, your highlight of the season?
The highlight of my season will be next Saturday week, if I'm being honest. Because we were in a qualifier for the Champions League at the start of the season, and now we're in the final.
Yeah.
So the journey we've been on, like, if we win or lose Saturday week, I don't mind. Because the level we've gone to and how good we have been, it's just a fucking testament to how good the manager is and the direction of the club.
Mad that Alexander-Arnold scored the first goal, man.
I have to say, look, this season is mental because there's just so much. Salah's opening goal against Arsenal, the one where he runs the length of the pitch, nips the ball and then slots it home, having missed about three chances beforehand, right? And God, this fella's never going to score. He's another Andy Cole. He's going to need four chances to score a goal. He might, if he gets 15 this season, we'd be happy with that, right? But then he goes and scores 400 goals. Misses four chances.
He scored as many with his head as with his right foot.
Really?
That's how fucking mad that is.
That goal, one of my favourites. No, there's one of the highlights of the season. Clavin's winner against Burnley.
Yeah.
In injury time.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
That's fucking mad.
Yeah.
Plus, he took it off Lovren, and Lovren was not out.
That's the one that wins his fourth. Him and Ings' goal against West Brom, which turns out to be a draw. That's another one. Those points that we pick up that I gave out to think about.
Well, I think we went on a run around that time
draws.
Winning late points.
Yeah.
Mm.
That period, I think we had Burnley, Bournemouth and something else where we'd rescued games. I can't remember the exact sequence, but
Palace was another one where we were winning down
because we never used to be able to do that.
Yeah, that was sort of
remember under Rodgers
time,
that was our biggest thing, right? You go 1-0 down, you're like, well, you may as well write the
shit
the
bed. Yeah.
We're never gonna get a point.
Van Dijk's debut against Everton and scoring the winner in the end. Means nothing in the end.
Yeah,
it wasn't even a league match, but we can pretend it's a league match now that we got into the Champions League and they didn't finish above us.
You know, Van Dijk might be the first.
Richard Keys, just hope you're watching.
Be the first player we've signed, right, who is like legitimately world class.
The finished article gets here,
definitely. Yeah. Like Salah, nobody expected him to be.
I don't think he expected himself. Right?
I did,
you did, whatever.
I said we're signing 20 goal a season man from the wide. I didn't expect him to be a 40 plus goal a season man from wide, but I was taking 20 and I would have been happy with that.
Even Salah still has improvement, right? But Van Dijk,
he hasn't reached the ceiling.
I know it's a Rolls Royce. I mean, he's just something else. He's much better. And if you went through my Twitter feed, there's probably lots of tweets on there going, why the fuck would you spend this money?
Didn't realise how quick he is.
Oh my God.
The match on Sunday, the speed, I was like, holy.
I still think he has a growth deformity. His head is way too big.
Honestly.
It's like it's a massive head.
He could play up front and he'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
Probably. But I still wouldn't be able to get over his head. He's like Damo. He's like the Dutch Damo.
He went
his head is an extra 4 foot on top of a 6 foot frame. It's strange.
You see him next to Ronaldo at the Players Awards. He's like mini me.
There's a picture in the orange kit before one of the games, and he's in the team, and it literally goes across the players, and then it just gets Van Dijk. His arms around the boys, like, fuck it.
There's so many moments. I'll tell you another one that'll be underrated and won't be thought of that much. But Karius's save against Newcastle, where we won 2-0 against Rafa's team, that was some save that day. It was the first moment I thought he tipped it around the post. It was top corner save. It was the first time I thought to myself, there's a fella now who's decided in his own mind that he deserves to be number one.
Yeah, because there was a few games, but his initial few games, whilst he was solid enough, he wasn't pulling off anything spectacular. No. You know, and everyone was going, yeah, but like when is he going to win his points? When's he going to? And that was kind of where he started to. And there was a few of them moments as the season went on
as well, right? You got Robertson and his 60-yard hunt against City. And then Alexander-Arnold blaming it in against Swansea. Like, what a finish that is. And it was Flano against Spurs type goal. Fucking hell, even Alexander-Arnold has scored. Like, you know what, he's so delighted. The other thing that I think has been interesting is how Milner has gone from being like this, you know, gammon-headed fucking pain in the ass.
Gammon-headed.
Nobody wants him to come on. Nobody, like, you know, not nobody, let me rephrase that. You know, he's not very popular. Yeah. So suddenly, he's a bit of a cult hero now, and he's actually funny on Twitter.
Yeah, he actually is,
And he's been brilliant in Saint Louis
Field. Look, another player like that in this transfer window, like, you'd fucking take your arm
Honestly,
off.
He's been brilliant.
That's Sammy Kadir, isn't it?
It is.
That's what you're looking at. You're looking at bringing in that experienced fella who's been at a club with a winner mentality to infuse that into the rest of the young players coming through who haven't necessarily. But while saying that though, if we go to a Champions League final with the group of players that we have, that young group of players that we have, and we go and win a Champions League, that idea of the winner's mentality, that's already
infused.
They'll
be 10 foot tall next season.
You've got it, haven't you?
The one thing I'd ask is that was some of the lowlights, because there was, like, the start of the season was manure. Like, given, if you look at our first 10 games, right, and you look at the points returned from the first 10 games, and you consider how close we could have been to City. But I do agree with Andy's point that that's a 100-point season is out of City. The last thing we wanted to have was our 95-point season
which would have been typical.
Yeah.
True.
Look, City are the best team that I've ever played in a Premier League.
Second.
By any stretch,
87-88 Liverpool was better
in the Premier League. By any,
well,
by any
then we've
measure.
Only won fucking one Champions League. Don't start going there. Do you know your fans will be all over this? He's only won one.
No,
we've won
my
two.
My point is, right, that they're probably the best side that's ever competed in the tournament, right? By any measure, you know, most goals, most, you know, longest winning streak, you know, most points, whatever. So after that, it doesn't really matter where. So I'm with Andy. I'm glad this is our, you know, 70 odd point season that you build on then. And next season's maybe your 88.
There's your target. That's what you need to be at.
So I think it's perfectly fine. But I think the lowlights, sorry, to go back to your. Look, I think that some of the lowlights are just, to go back to Paddy's point, a little bit of lack of trust in what the manager's trying to do. And I think we've all been guilty of it, you know. I think he got slated for not buying a different left back, right? He got slated for not buying another centre-half, slated for not buying a goalkeeper, slated for not replacing Coutinho, slated for rotating. And despite what Paddy's saying about the level of trust in the manager now is so high, I actually think two bad results and, you know, there's still people who are turning against him, like, you know. So
I think that's true of every club, to be honest with you.
It is, because that's the nature of it. But so I think for me, the low light was always, and I'm guilty of it, not being able to see what he was trying to do. I didn't understand not buying another centre-half, because I thought we needed Van Dijk and another one.
My personal low light is Danny Ward getting less games than Mignolet.
Well, Simon Mignolet is a constant low light.
And he's just, like, all those games
that was,
he played in.
That was a fiasco, really, wasn't it? I mean,
doesn't it feel like he doesn't play for us anymore, though?
They turned him off in February. Do you not see that picture where he's still standing?
It just feels like
standboy mode.
He was in full on standboy. It was just like, there was mad shit going on in front of him. He's just, oh, there's the camera, I'll get it.
I feel like Bogdan was more of a player in the second half.
Well, actually didn't realise he was still at the club until Sunday when I seen him on the pitch. I was like, what? I thought he was gone.
Yeah, I mean, Manninga hung around long enough, didn't he, before that? You know, I don't know what it is about squad keepers and whatnot. But my low light, the obvious one's Tottenham. But then in a way, that kind of... That almost
gave us a kick in the ass that we needed.
That almost focused the mind, do you know what I mean? And you know, what happened, it was unfortunate that we were all here and we had, you know, the Davy Fairclough event and all that sort of stuff. By the end, it was going a little bit sour. But look, I actually think the Man City game, the first Man City game, is probably the low point for me, because I think that we were robbed that day of an opportunity to really to make our mark in an early part of the season. And the Mane sending off just robbed everyone of that potential spectacle. Because at that point, I think we were definitely still well capable of winning that game. We were goal down, but like it was easily turn around a bull. That's a word, turn around. But yeah, that's the low point for me, the City game. I think the Spurs game was worse.
No. I felt like the Spurs game, we just, like this, I think we learned from it, thankfully. I think we learned from it, don't get me wrong, but watching that, like watching a City game, maybe it's because we had the Mane sending off to like comfort us.
Well, see, I agree. Shani makes a point there, and he makes two good points, and I want to put them to you, right? But he says the day we lose to City is the day the league is won by City, right? Mm. It gives them the springboard. And if we beat them there, it changes the complexion, the opening of the season for both them and us. Yeah. Right?
And everybody else.
Maybe, and everyone else that's chasing, right? And we could have beat them that. I agree with your point. Although we went one goal down, mainly due to Mignolet.
We were very good in the first half.
Yeah, like we could have come back into that game. And we proved it over the two legs that we would have been able to salvage that in terms of the Champions League. But Shawnee asked a question. What was the watershed moment in this season? For me, you know, people talk about many things, but I think that second game against City, when we come back out of the winter break, right? We've had a few funny. We've done well over the Christmas period.
We've done better than most, actually.
We had that January lull again when the cup games. And I don't give a shit about the cup games. I'm happy to get out of the FA Cup as soon as possible, to be totally honest with you. It doesn't get you Champions League. It's an irrelevant cup, right? It's the same. I like the League Cup because it's midweek. It doesn't really take up time at the weekends. Yeah. Whereas the FA Cup, there's all the bullshit and romance of the Cup. Europe and the league, that's Liverpool's bread and butter and always has been, always will be. But looking at the watershed moment for me is that City game, the 4-3 in Anfield. Because suddenly, the team that we support, the team that we want to see do so well, really starts to believe that this team can go on a run. And we all said it at Christmas. We got a good Christmas. We had a good springboard to go on a run to really nail down top four and do something potentially in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. And that just gives them the belief. They've beaten the unbeaten team in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, for me, aside from the Spurs game, which I've talked about, it's not necessarily a watershed, but I think him picking his back five and sticking with it, like Karius, Lovren, Van Dijk, Robertson and Alexander-Arnold. I think when he said, and he obviously said, this is my first choice defence, and they started to play together. I mean, I think if you look at our record, defensive record since Van Dijk joined, or even since the Spurs game, to be honest with you, I think we're like second.
Yeah.
Second in the league on points, second on the league in goals. We only conceded 38 goals across the season, right?
Yeah, a lot of them come early doors, didn't they?
That's a goal.
Spurs have had more penalties in Anfield than we have.
Exactly. So
actually, that's a good show.
For me, when he went, fuck this messing around now, carry us, and these are the lads. These are the ones that are going to do it. It just changed. Everything changed.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about Karius, to go back to it, is it's not that Karius is necessarily a better shot stopper than Mignolet, though I think he is. He's actually not that much more, certainly at the beginning, wasn't that much more decisive coming for crosses, but he allows the team to play 10 yards higher.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was the watershed.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, Lovren and Van Dijk are not worried about being aggressive and losing the ball because Karius comes to get it. Yeah. Now he's going to give the odd penalty away. He's going to get sent off. It's going to happen.
It's the deal with Karius as well, is how quick he makes his play. He doesn't wait half a second. The ball's up and it's gone, and that gets us going.
All the time. How many times have you seen Mignolet catch the ball, fall over, sit down, read the paper, and then?
Sometimes just came to me. Do you remember in that Tottenham game, Salah's goal, which we thought won the match? And again, the highlight of the season is him appealing for handball halfway through a mazy dribble. Being able to stop and go, and then carrying on and still scoring while the rest of the time carries on at normal pace.
It's like when Suarez pretended to be injured, remember, against someone, and then he got back up and scored.
And then went back there. That was a bit, failed that bit. So, there is so many moments, like, there is always going to be so many moments across the season, but ultimately, like, I think you're right. Making a decision on the goalkeeper is huge, the outcome of the season.
Yeah.
The belief the City win gives us is huge. Being able to turn over teams on a regular basis. There's a lot of draws as we get to the back end of the season and at different points that sort of, particularly the start and at the end of the season, which sort of put that complexion that we don't manage to get to 76 points. And there is, it's very frustrating. But I suppose it's the first time I can remember and I'll go back like 13, 14 potentially looking at it, but it's the first time I can remember in a long time that I can see a team progressing season on season. So we've gone from Klopp coming in and taking over and having a great Europa League run to us wondering how does he make that team into a top four team. He turns them into a top four team with no Europa League, and then we're wondering how is he going to manage a Champions League campaign, and also can he nail top four whilst also managing a Champions League. Not only does he nail it, he gets us into the fucking Champions League final. Like, it's to be absolutely applauded, right? The next one, I think, for us is assuming that we win the Champions League, which is a fair assumption, to be honest with you. But assuming that we win the Champions League, you know, the next thing, the last domino, essentially, is if he wins a title with us, if he turns this team into a title-winning team, and I hate it, and I'm not giving it the old next season is our season, but you can see how he progresses this.
There's a legitimate path to this, which is I saw something online which said that it was after the Roma game. Someone did what our performance is in the second half of the season for the first 60 minutes and what our performance is in the last 30 minutes. And basically, we won every game pretty much in the first 60 minutes. And then we start losing loads of points after 60 minutes onwards. And that's the squad depth.
Yeah.
Because when you're taking Salah or Mane or Firmino off, and you're bringing on Ings or Solanke. So what you need then is if we buy this Feka guy or Pulisic or, you know, whoever we decide is this attacking midfield player, plus you bring Keita in, plus you bring a couple of other, suddenly that squad, you're not having the massive drop off, and that's how you win the title.
Yeah,
because we're the best team in the league for the first 60 minutes, or we'll run City very close for the first 60 minutes. The difference is they bring Bernardo Silva,
they bring quality on,
we bring Solanke on,
and the thing is, like, you know, in the last sort of 8 to 10 games, we've been looking at the bench and we've been going, oh, I hope we don't have to revert to the bench. Now, Lallana's coming back into the fold and you're thinking, oh, it's going to be a great option to have Lallana on the bench for the Champions League final. Exactly. Because, like, that, even that in itself seems like a massive upgrade compared to what we've had. So that just highlights, you know, where we need to go. I think another thing that's important, taking it into next season, is that we've started to make Anfield a place where teams don't get much. You know, unbeaten in the
except
league
penalties.
At home. Yeah, except penalties. But unbeaten in the league at home. You know, it's been a while since it's felt like Anfield's been a place where teams get nothing.
But that's why United won titles, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that is such
an important part of trying to win a league is your home form. You know, obviously your away form, but your home form has got to be rock solid.
Because that's what's interesting about United, you know, when Ferguson left...
Man into the mic, do you remember those things?
When Ferguson left and Moyes came in, and suddenly all these teams who hadn't won in Old Trafford for 30 years started winning. Suddenly... nobody fears going to
Old Trafford. Everyone thought they had a chance, didn't they? Yeah. It was mad.
Whereas the other, when Ferguson was there, it was like fighting Mike Tyson. You lost before you got to the ring. Right? You were like, we're not going to get anything here.
And I, you know, Roy Hodgson was a classic for this. He come out pre-match interview, so defeatist. Yeah. But that would be what a lot of managers would go there for.
Would you have
for
a good performance?
Yeah. You know,
great performance.
Mick McCarthy would go there
fucking
and play no one because he'd say, "Well, we've got no chance. We've got a good game next."
Talking to Roy Hodgson, right? You know? I witnessed the maddest postseason conversation ever on NBC Sports at the weekend, right?
Okay.
Because I happen to be in America, as we always do at the weekends when we're watching Elos. And I was watching it there, and Robbie Earle said that Roy Hodgson was his manager of the season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that, if you took away the 4-7 games of the season, he matched everything that Pep and Klopp has achieved over the course of the season. Now, I don't know how a team that managed to get 44 points in over 38 games matches... sorry, 44 points over 31 games because they had no points when he came in, right? How that matches achieving 75 or 100 points.
No, they lost their first 5 games. He lost the first 2.
Oh, right.
He's just carried on the form,
they
didn't he, when he come in? Yeah,
he was manager for 2
or 2, was he?
Yeah.
People just forgot about that bit.
They
just gave that to the
and ball. I guarantee you that's because, he's just there going, no, I wasn't there for those. I was over there.
He's done a good job, but I read somewhere that it's like, keeping Palace up is as much of an achievement as, you know, what Pep has done or what Klopp has done. Or
yeah, but look at the points tally that it took to stay up this season.
I know.
What was it?
It was 30, one of the lowest
37,
ever.
38 points keeps you up.
44, right? Yeah. Which I think in most years, you know, would have got you pretty much just outside the relegation
zone. Yeah, you would have been staying up on the last day.
But yeah, so according to Robbie Earle, anyway, he's the manager of the season. He shown Pep, who managed to get 100 points and win the league.
It's because he's the highest placed Englishman.
I couldn't understand the logic that was going on. And the next man, they had this debate. Benitez was getting it because he managed to do really well with Newcastle, and Sean Dyche was the other one that should be in the running for it as well. And I was like, did I miss the start of it, which says that outside of the top six or the top four? But no, this is not including them.
Well, they keep saying about Burnley, they're like, well, they matched Arsenal or something, and it's like, yeah, but that's Arsenal. They've had the worst season in fucking 10 years.
Wenger's leaving off, and it's like, this is silly.
They're in complete disarray.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to wrap it up, but it wouldn't be fair to talk about this season without saying this is the Salah season. Like, and one of the questions that comes in, how many goals do we reckon he scores next season? If I'm putting it on, I'm saying I think he gets 25. I don't think he does 40s
league
again.
League goals, are we talking?
I think, or 30 plus. I think he gets somewhere between 20 and 25 goals, and that's going to be a hell of a return anyway, because he's going to be heavily marked. And actually, I'm expecting bigger seasons out from Mino and Mane goal-wise, because I think there's going to be so much focus and so much attention to be put on Salah, like man marked and double man marked, that'll create more space for anyone who's playing in and around him.
I think his goals per minute will stay the same, but he'll play less, because I think we'll bring in two attackers, and I think he'll rotate more. But I don't think there'll be any drop off. As I said earlier, the reason why you'd feel he'd do it again is because of all the chances he missed. If he scored, you know, 32 goals out of 35 opportunities, you'd say, oh, fucking hell, that's a freak, that's a freak of a season. But he scored, well, he sure scored 50 odd goals.
Well, how many misses did Mane have? Mane scores the most difficult fucking chance.
Very wasteful, hasn't he?
Mane scores left footed from 30 yards into the top corner, and then misses from three yards with his favourite foot.
if he can change that around, do you know what I mean? There's a 25.
Everyone's saying
goal of the season,
25 to 30. I think he'll be in the 25.
But he also won't need to score as many next year
because you have more.
Because we have the defence, and we are not in a position like we were in Klopp's first two seasons where, if you don't score three, you're worrying about it.
I want to move on to transfers, because we are starting to move around. So, like, most of the attention seems to be on Fekir. Obviously, I think that securing top four probably changes that we might get a few deals done earlier than we would have expected to do had we not gotten top four in terms of what was there.
Plus, it's a World Cup as well.
And it's a World Cup year as well. So, you're expecting to see what's coming in. People are talking about May 17th. I think everyone needs to remember that domestic transfers as opposed to. So, if we're going to sign anyone from the Premier League or within England, that's when we can start to sign them. Other leagues won't be finished.
Announce Martial.
He'd be a great. I think he would actually.
He'd be fucking brilliant, but
yeah, probably
he
would.
Like,
yeah,
you know.
So transfers. From what I heard today is that Fekir, despite all the conversations going on, is actually a live deal and potentially could be announced before the World Cup. Okay. Right. On the midfield side, there is no solid targets in terms of what they're talking about. But the one they're always talking about is that we may indeed be looking to get in the mix for Jorginho. So, lads, we'll just take Jorginho, the Napoli midfielder, in our midfield.
I can't pretend I've watched him.
There's people doing podcasts and I'm pretending to watch players. So I may as well.
What I will say about him, right, is I think he's the same guy that used to play for Hella Veronas a couple of years back.
Well, yep.
And we were linked to him then.
They make beer and ice cream.
And basically, everyone who now loves Jorginho did article after article after article about how he wasn't good enough for us.
Then. What about Liparski? Do you remember your man, the Polish skeezer, who's also at Napoli?
What's his name?
Pierre Liparski. He played in the 1986 World Cup.
But we had Zielinski.
That's the one I'm talking about here.
Look, I think that
the bus that wouldn't slow down.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I mean, I don't care. I really don't. I mean, if Klopp turned around and said, as you said, we're signing Ricky Lambert, I'd go, all right, he's got a plan. Like, you know.
Sound.
And I think that what season after season in the last three seasons has proven is the club is much more joined up about the type of players they want. And who's failed under Klopp? As a signing,
it's hard to pinpoint Bilbatch. Anyone, isn't it?
You know, Matip probably been a bit disappointing this season.
Van Dijk.
You know,
70 million, like,
where he's spent,
I would expect more goals.
I think both on the lower end and the higher end. I can't think of a bad buy that he's made.
Milner.
Oh, he's only going to say that the low point for
Moise. I'll fucking tell you, signing. Yeah. Hang on. I'll end it for you. And it's going to ruin all fucking Klopp signings from here on. He extended Mignolet's contract. That's the fucking end of it. Klopp out.
He needed a decent fee to push Karius on, though. Yeah. It was like a big fuck you to Karius.
I wouldn't push
Karius
it. He's got a button that turns him on and off. Stand by.
So when it comes to transfers, I think in the midfield, I take Jorginho. But then I take George Daly. It wouldn't matter.
Okay. One that's been floating around the background that people haven't been paying much attention to is Jeremy O'Dromlin sells at Newcastle as a potential centre back to come in.
He's the captain, right?
Yeah, personally for me, I've been very impressed with him. Any time I've seen him, he seems to be, like, again, a footballing player, footballing style defender, and looks fairly calm in terms of what it is.
Is he front foot?
Front foot. Okay. Yeah, well, it's very hard to know, because he's in a Rafa defence who likes to be compact and sit between
but
the
what's
lines.
Interesting about the centre halves is I saw someone saying they want Zuma was the second after Van Dijk for winning aerial duels or something, but the reason Van Dijk wins all the aerial duels is because that's what he does. Lovren stands off and sweeps up. So you've got to look at it in partnership, really. You can't just go, oh, this guy, so I don't know enough about this Lascelles to say could he play next to Van Dijk, but what you need is a better Lovren.
Rather than another
Van Dijk.
I don't know
what a better Lovren is or who that Lascelles. Is. Well, it might be him. But you've got to look at it in tandem. You've got to say, look, Van Dijk's going to win everything.
What about this Yerry Mina fella that we're meant to have signed?
Who?
Secretly. Yerry Mina. At Barcelona.
That's a totally made up player.
Played at the weekend and they lost 5-4. It's first like game they've lost.
He sounds
like our type of
Joe Gomez doesn't exist.
Joe Gomez doesn't exist. We've long had this, not a real player. I know. There's a Jomez who occasionally plays for us, but there's no such thing as a Joe Gomez.
No.
One thing, look, for everyone that's been out there saying that Chan was putting on his injury and he was faking it and that he just didn't want to play, but he'll turn up for the Champions League final. Poor bloke's been left out of the Germany national team squad, and I've seen people delight at this. Look, it serves him right for faking his injury. Like, clearly, if he's injured and he's not in the Germany squad, he's actually injured.
But he's not just making that up. Do you know why people don't like Chan? It's because 50% of Twitter likes Henderson. And you cannot, it's impossible to talk about Henderson or Chan on Twitter without talking about the other.
Without somebody coming into you.
Same as Lovren and Sacco. Yeah. Can't talk about Lovren without Sacco.
Even now, you can't talk about it. Sacco's still coming into the
conversation. People who don't like Chan, they're reacting to people who hate Henderson and have used Chan as the example. The truth of it is, we could do with both of them.
Yeah.
And I'd keep Chan, I'd pay him what he wants, really, to be honest. I think he's a 24-year-old German international. He's coming to the end of his contract. Mm. He's only going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand. I get the release clause thing, so that I wouldn't give him that out of principle. But in terms of the wages, I don't know why we're... If it's the wages that we're balking on, I don't know why we're...
Okay, I think there's one that people should pay attention to. I think we're going to be in the market for an experienced midfielder, right? I think if we're talking about rotating players and also bringing in somebody to guide the other players around them, given that we sign, the likes of signing a Kadira or an Arturo Vidal would
Frank
be...
Frank Lampard.
Lampard even, yeah. Or even Gerrard.
Bring Gerrard back.
Gerrard, when he gets sacked from Rangers. When he gets sacked from Rangers in October.
All is forgiven.
After he gets caught singing You'll Never Walk Alone in Parkhead with the Celtic fans before the match.
I wonder if Gerrard's still registered by the club. Like, you know, in a Champions League final, last minute.
Send him on.
What a man.
Agar is.
Lucas is.
Oh, Jesus. But no, a genuine question. Would Kadira and Vidal.
Yeah,
Vidal, they're two type of players who, like, I could see Kadira sit at the bottom of their midfield the way Chan did for us as well, but just have that little bit more control.
Do you know actually what I think? Do you know what the type of player I'm missing now? Some people might not know Herrera of United.
Yes,
Herrera is a harrying, hustling little bastard, and all he does is he slows down the game, he stops teams breaking, he does little holding on to players, doing little things. We don't have that. We had it kind of with Lucas, but not to the same level.
But he's also technically very good.
He is a very, very good, but we don't have that. And he's that little bit of nastiness. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's what
Vidal brings you, but he brings a little bit more as well.
Vidal is physically dominated. You put him, and he'd probably actually play a little further forward. I think he plays on the right of a three, right? So Vidal, I'd worry about his legs, you know, can he still do it? But Vidal would be a great signing. But, you know, if I was, I'd be going to the likes of Madrid, you know, and inquiring about Cruz maybe and seeing, you know, we've got a lot
Kovacic or Isco.
Isco's
another one who
you know, that's what we should be going to look for as an experienced player is, and Juventus the same, the likes of these players now who, you know, they're not going to get a game. Well, Vidal's a Bayern, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, players like
I think he's out of contract. I think he's available on a free, and he's the type of player. But again,
he has been injured, hasn't
he? Yeah. The other thing is that also remember that we have signed Keita, so let's not forget that.
What I was about to say,
and he is a snidey little fucker,
exactly.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we might get a bit of that
he's
from him, like, we sort of thing, you know.
Yeah,
and fitter.
Well, get loads of them.
Yeah, just get another one.
Remember your man that used to play for Arevalo Rios, who used to play for Uruguay as well. He used to just run around kicking people.
There's another Keita that used to play for Lazio, isn't
it? There is,
just
yeah.
Get all the Keitas
Baldo
in.
Keita.
And yeah, just get all the Keitas in.
And actually, if we're going to get all the Keitas in, we may as well get the Dembele's in as well.
Get all the Dembele's. Well, actually, most of Dembele's are going to leave Spurs.
Yeah.
They reckon they're going to let him go. I think we could do worse than having Dembele.
I can tell you now, Moussa Dembele is a myth. Right, and I'm not going to have this because this shite that I've listened to all fucking season long about Moussa Dembele me arse. Go on and do any stats comparison, and the fellas behind Chan and Henderson. Why would we sign someone that's worse than Chan and Henderson?
No, you mean Moussa Sissoko. I'm talking about Moussa.
No, I'm talking about Moussa Dembele.
No, we need to sign Sissoko. All the Dembele's.
No, we're signing. Yeah. Okay,
Usaman,
so
Dembele.
I'll tell you one. I'll tell
John
you one.
John Dembele. Paddy Dembele. Dennis, sign them all up.
I want to be ahead of the game here. If we signed a Zachariah, Dennis Zachariah off Borussia Mönchengladbach. If we sign him, right, there's a load of Zacharias about to come live in Europe at this stage. So sign the best one, Dennis Zachary. He will sort our midfield out.
There's
going
to be a few Robertsons out there. We could do a whole team where
of the same names.
Just people. Do you remember
Spurs were trying that at right back at one stage? What was your man's name?
Ben Walker. Then they had
Danny Rose, and they had Danny Mini Rose or something.
No,
was like,
they had Kyle Walker. Then they had
Walker Peters.
Walker Peters.
There was a fella there with the exact same name. It's like when Madrid had Iker Casillas and Kiko Casillas. yeah, I think it is. Glenn Whelan is a great shout as well. Get Glenn in to hold down
the
midfield.
Fuck's Glenn
Whelan? Oh my God.
Jesus.
Right, the last.
Well, what, I suppose the question is, what will we get out of Milner next season? And that's where this whole
plenty
argument
of beans.
Bringing someone with experience.
See, the worry with players the age of Milner is when they go off the cliff, they go.
Yeah.
Like, it's like.
But you'll find that when most things go off the cliff, they don't come back. Yeah. Unless it's like a paraglider.
But you know what I mean? Like, at that age, they don't gradually decline. They go bang, done.
Michael Carrick.
Yeah.
Michael Carrick? No, we're not signing him.
No, I think he's gone off
Pogba.
The cliff.
Pogba would be a sensational in the club.
Like Johnny Evans a couple of weeks ago, didn't he?
Yeah. Johnny Evans.
Johnny Evans.
But they're saying Johnny Evans has a €3 million buyer clause.
So?
Because they've gone down, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is €2,999,000. Way too much.
Yeah, but wasn't he being touted for 25 million
in January? The last question I want to put on the transfer roundup is that we're talking about Alden Mohammeds. Yeah, I agree. So in Alden Mohammeds, we're bound to find one that's even half as good as Salah. Be grand. Alden Mohammeds.
But it's the most popular name in the world. So we must be able to.
Can't be wrong.
In Liverpool now.
All the babies are being born Mohammed.
Yeah.
Mohammed Hennessy. So the last one then I'll put to you is the one that's got more people's backs up than anything else in the world, signing Ship Butland. Jack Butland for it seems nonsensical. At least James Pearce came out in Robertson and said we're not looking at him at all, which to me that closes.
I don't see how we sign him, but if we did, I don't care. Like, at the end of the day, who care? Like, who's he got wrong so far? You know, how many good signings?
Manager?
No, wait a minute.
The goalkeeping signings have been bogey.
Well, Karius is
outside of Karius. Well, that was a £4 million signing. So it's
Klopp assigned one goalkeeper.
And manager.
What?
He signed Alex Maninger.
Oh, Maninger. Well, Maninger.
That's two.
It was fine. But my point
is. And he extended Mignolet's contract. That's one out of three now.
How many good signings do they need to bring in before we go, they know what they're doing?
They're all going to be queuing up like the teams were for Lucas. Yeah, nobody ever seemed to put a bid in for him. And not even when he was on a free did anyone want to sign him.
Isn't it also hard to judge like a goalkeeper when you're playing in the worst team in the league? Like, I mean, I just think that it makes some goalkeepers look really good.
Let me throw Vardy. Would you be interested in Vardy?
All day long. Every day.
Ahead of Ings and Solanke.
Not Solanke,
but ahead of Ings, yeah.
Right, and what about Lanzini? Does anyone like Lanzini?
If he's fifth choice, I'd take him. If
I don't get the Lanzini. Lanzini is like a poor man's Coutinho, and I don't understand why we'd sign. Given that I think, like, I understand the Fekir link. I understand if we went for Malcolm. I'd understand why we went for a Lamar, because they're all sort of much faster paced versions of Coutinho, and the goals come and the assists come, but in a different manner, right?
But think about who Lanzini's last three managers were: Allardyce, Bilic, and Moyes.
Yeah,
I mean. I think with these guys, you've got to look beyond what they've done necessarily, and you've got to think about what they could do. And
yeah. Chamberlain is the example of that.
When we signed Mane from Southampton, right? I remember a very famous podcaster on several other podcasts who said that he's not even in the top, like, 50 players in the Premier League or something stupid like that. And look what he's, look what Klopp has got out of it.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to trust him.
Stuart Downing.
Shut it down.
Sorry, I meant to say Jack Wilshere.
No,
he's playing tonight, isn't he?
I take Ramsey though.
I take Ramsey.
I wouldn't take either of them.
Would you not?
No. I think there's better players. Well, Wilshere on a free, maybe, but I think Zachariah at Gladbach definitely is one that we should be looking at.
You've just made him up.
I haven't.
He doesn't exist.
Plays for Switzerland. He's going to be in the World Cup. Everyone was talking about Zachariah now after the World Cup, come back and talk to me, right? Because I'll be saying, I fucking told you this.
I will definitely do that. I will definitely.
Absolutely.
Do that.
Lazar Markovic is meant to be having a great season at Anderlecht. Would you take him back?
Really? No, he's not. He's at Liverpool.
No, he was.
He got sent back off loan.
No, he's still there.
He's gone back.
He saw out the whole season at Anderlecht after he didn't get
it. Wasn't he at Melwood the other day?
No. That was just, he was picking up his heroin.
Allegedly.
No, it's heroin comics.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
from Marvel. Yeah. Right then, so.
That's why Buvac left. He saw Markovic walking back.
Actually, the Buvac thing, he was back in Melwood, didn't manage to make it up to Anfield at the weekend.
Okay.
Had something on.
Clearing his locker, was it?
Well, I don't know. It was Buvac back.
Selling his gap.
I've heard anyway that he's back for the Champions League final. Do you hear anything when you're over there, right? Because you've got the word on the street.
Ward on street. No, not there. Ward on street.
Ward on street. Ward on street.
I think we're just being a bit optimistic there. If we think that's going to be resolved, it's not looking like it, is it? Really?
It is. I don't know.
Well, look, I think there was a bit of concern because obviously it coincided with a couple of dodgy results. But ultimately, I'm sure we can get over it.
Right, lads. I don't know. I think we'll do the Tuesday Club on Thursday next week. I'm thinking of doing a fat bag for a Thursday Club.
Are you just like thinking out loud here?
No. This is part of the pod. It's part of the build up.
He's on out of oil now.
This is leading into the final, leading into it, right?
Yeah. So we'll definitely go that way potentially Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, right? Mm. Next week with the build up. There won't be anything on Saturday. And actually, for everyone that's watching, right? Look, if anyone's based in Dublin and they want to come down and watch the game with us, we're going to be in Stoutman's for the match itself. There's going to be a good few of us down here. We've a couple of special guests in from London. I'm saying no more, but there's no plan to do a podcast. We'll be just down here. We want to enjoy the game, and that's it, right? So we'll do our bits before the match, and the Fatback 4 will be on the Sunday after the game as well to cover off the post match thing while the rest of us are doing a hangover. And having roasts. But look, before we do that, Dave, because you probably won't be back in before then, but no. Champions League preview, mate, what are you going to say?
So I already said it to the lads. I think I just have this feeling we're going to kill him. I think we'll win, and I think we'll win well. Now, it's very rare that I predict that we won't, but I just think our front, so if we take the argument that their front three is amazing and our front three is amazing. Mm. Our defence is better than theirs.
Mm. Yeah.
And our front three is better than theirs. And I don't see how their back four and goalkeeper, particularly the goalkeeper, is going to cope with what we throw at them. I just think they wouldn't have faced anything like this in La Liga.
Mm.
Anything like this. Even Barcelona, which is, you know, they have a great front three. Everything goes through Messi. With Liverpool, you don't know where it's going to go. You man mark Salah, which is what people have tried to do. The other two will tear you apart. So I think Klopp is due a win in a final, and I think we'll win well.
Man will be dying the next day. Jesus, if you win. Oh man, you were out for about a week.
You literally just sounded like Conor McGregor there. Should have heard that. I thought Conor McGregor was sitting there beside me for a minute. Dicko,
I keep yo-yoing. You know, one minute I'm thinking we're gonna win it handily. The next minute I'm thinking, well, look, the pedigree, the experience that Madrid have got. So look, I can't call it at this moment in time. Mm. I think a lot of it will come down to who gets off to the faster start. Mm. I wouldn't feel confident if we went a couple of goals down, because we just haven't really... Yeah, albeit we did what we did in Istanbul, but we just don't seem to be a come-from-behind type of team.
Mm. So, and we don't have a Vladimir Smeets in this team.
We don't have Stevie G in the team. So, look, I mean...
Zidane winning three Champions League is like Harry Kane winning three Golden Boots.
All I'm saying is, on that, just don't forget that Bill Paisley...
Paisley is the only man to have won three Champions Leagues.
But you can, you know, going to Dave's prediction, you could see that happening. You know, you could see us blowing them away. What I'm hoping in this whole scenario is that, you know, Madrid don't take us as seriously as they should be taking us, because they are, you know, the big dogs. That, you know, they're going after. What is it? Number 13, is it? Will they really accommodate us the way that they should accommodate us? I'm not sure they will.
No.
So look, you know, we've got as good a chance as any team that we would have. You know, I'd have been more afraid of us coming up against Atletico than Real
or Spurs, who were the best team in England this season.
You know, so look. Mm-hmm. We've got to go there with as good a chance as beating anyone. So yeah.
I'm gonna say now, for Gav, it's a free hit. Oh. It's a free hit. Now the way I look at it is
not a free hit. It's a Champions League final. Jesus.
Now the way I look at it is, we have nothing to lose. The Real Madrid are one of the best teams in the world ever. We have Ronaldo.
Champions, double champions.
We have Ronaldo. The biggest battle on the pitch for me, watching the game, would be Ramos against Firmino. The only thing I don't want to happen is if Madrid go one up and then they start rolling around the ground, because it'll fucking ruin it. Like, as a spectacle, it should be two of the best attacking teams in Europe going fucking hell for leather.
If they get their noses in front, they won't be asked about it turning into a showcase. They'll just want to win.
But look, I'll put it this way, Dave Thomas. You're happy, you're predicting the win.
Yeah, I think we're scoring the first 10 minutes.
Score.
Kill him.
Oh,
I think we'll win 3-1.
Okay. Dicko?
I'll agree with that prediction and say 3-1.
We're going
to win
3-1. Fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Pads?
I'm going to go 2-0.
I'm saying it's extra time, it's a penalties, and then it's fucking lottery job. We're going to be relying on
you. You'll have your Navas jersey.
I'll be down
in
the bleed Liffey.
Listen to him.
I'll be down the Liffey.
Scored equaliser by Gareth Bale in the 98th minute.
Oh, fuck.
Right? 8 minutes of injury time. Not a single free kick in the whole match. Right, don't be just like
it's going to be the Welsh final.
Yeah,
Bale's going to score, then Woodburn's going to score too.
Yes.
Right, listen.
Can we just before we wrap up? Can we just have a quick couple of minutes on that whole fiasco that has unfolded around the tickets for the final?
Dave Thomas is going to go. We'll just say goodbye to Dave Thomas, and we will, Ray. We will. Can have a quick couple of minutes. Dave, thanks for coming in.
Good man. Good man.
Everyone say goodbye to Dave. Don't say goodbye to Dave. There's hearts and everything going.
Dave was never going to Kiev, so he's not asked, is he?
Right, Ray, let's go. You are a match going red. Goes the game. Dave, I'll talk to you during the week.
See you later.
See you,
cheers,
Dave.
Buddy. Can't wait to see the Welsh final. FAW Cup. Barry Town versus Aberystwyth.
There's not a perfect situation, is there? Because at the end of the day, there's never going to be enough tickets to satisfy the demand, but just sort of from personal experience and, you know, what was going on Friday around the ballot, I mean, the mind boggled as the day progressed. You were supposedly finding out whether we were successful in the ballot on Friday, and you're checking your email every hour initially, then every 10 minutes, then every 5 minutes, then every fucking minute by the time it got to 5-6 o'clock. And the email comes out at 6:30, you know, and within that sort of 24 hour period, you know, the charter flights that were being put on, the prices had been hiked up by 150 quid. The whole thing has been a bit of a PR disaster, and you know, I know it's unfortunate that the final is in Kiev and that adds to the complications of the logistics of getting there, but I just I just think it's been really badly handled. Yeah. You know, everyone knows that everyone can't go, but I think there's been a bit of a PR own goal on this one.
But right, is the one thing that keeps coming back and keeps coming back, the whole thing. I'll go back to it. Right, putting a final on in these mad cities,
yeah,
is just seems absurd.
Outrageous,
to me,
yeah.
Right? Because like between the travel costs to get there, right, yeah, what the host city is doing in terms of lumping on top of these costs,
yeah,
and then the whole other impacts that we're talking about, these 16,000 tickets to the Liverpool fans, I think they did 20,000 to the Madrid fans, and it's an 80,000 seat stadium. Like, you know, that's less than half.
Yeah. to the actual, you know, core fans of the actual clubs of participating. Clubs, yeah. I mean,
I know it's the old corporate shouting and it's all there and it's all the sponsorship, but it's just.
But it sours, yeah, the final before it's away, even taken place. Yeah. Before it's taken place,
I think they miss a trick with deciding that he's fine. So far out from the events, right?
Yeah.
In reality, like, you're looking at Madrid and you're looking at Liverpool. Do you know where the ideal final
Paris.
For this? Exactly,
yeah.
Paris.
Yeah.
Where the two teams, where both sets of fans of the two teams, and you could have this huge spectacle of football.
Yeah.
If you had, say, Milan against, I don't know, say Milan against Bayern Munich, you host the final somewhere in Switzerland.
Yeah. Or Spain,
you know what I mean? If it's a German English team, you go to Holland, and you've got Belgium. Do you know? There's just no logic to the way it's been decided. It's purely about greed. It's purely about money. And no matter what we say and what we do about it, nothing's going to change, because football fundamentally these days is about greed and money.
Yeah,
right. It's just greed and money. There's nothing. If all this idea of socialism and all that type of stuff, bollocks. It's money. Money drives everything, right? And unless, if you put enough money in front of the people, they'll have that final in Qatar in the space of 4 years. Right? They'll have the final in Qatar. If the Qatar World Cup tomorrow is out, you'll be seeing Champions League finals in Dubai and Qatar, because they'll put 200 million in front of UEFA and say, we want to host the final there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want to host the final here. We come down here, we make it a huge spectacle, and there'll be 10,000 tickets given to the fans. They won't be able to travel down, and there'll be soulless empty stadiums when it comes to the finals. But they won't care, because they'll be getting 200 and 250 million.
The irony, though, actually, is probably be easier to get to Dubai than it would be to Kiev.
Oh, no. Well, they're out. Somebody,
because, you know, regular flights to Dubai.
I think it was
Dubai.
Simon Brundish actually pointed out that you could do a week in Dubai, right?
Yeah.
Fly into Dubai and then get a flight to Kiev and fly back to Dubai for an overnight, right?
Yeah.
For less than it was costing to fly from Liverpool to Kiev.
To Kiev direct, yeah.
And to get accommodation there, you'd actually get your full holiday and get to Kiev to the match and back again for a day's relaxation after the final, and then fly back to Liverpool for less than it was to go in for a day trip.
I guess the only thing, you know, that you would say about Liverpool fans in particular,
they'll get there.
They'll be creative with the routes.
Same as the Irish fans. I'll be honest with you. It's the same as the Irish fans who travel to the matches. Like, they always end up there, no matter where it is. Like, they could be playing in Syria in the middle of the city, one of the cities being bombed, and there'd be still about 5,000 of them somewhere in the stadium
singing.
Singing.
Yeah.
Like, that's the same with the Liverpool fans, and it's a credit to them for the amount that we are prepared to travel and spend that amount of money to go to. We know we've got people who are going over to the game and trying to get tickets and trying to.
It's the equivalent, you know, for people going out there, for individuals going out there, it's like the equivalent of a family holiday, basically.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, it's a lot of money to be stumping up. And even the price of the match tickets are ridiculous. Mm. I mean, apparently the fans were consulted, but what fans say, oh yeah, I think the right price to charge is 300 and odd for category one, 280 for category two, 140, and oh yeah, it's okay to pay 100 and odd quid for a restrict, 109 quid for a restrictive view. And like, I just,
and their restrictive views aren't just like a pole that you can look around. There's actually lumps of the stadium. We're talking about full on walls that are coming out 15 feet right from the restrictive view.
Yeah.
And you're only seeing a portion of the goal and the corner flag at one end of the ground.
Holy shit.
And there's the massive running track around it and everything. You know, it's, look, if they win it, then obviously all this will be kind of. Forgot it'll be sort of condemned to history and all that sort of stuff.
And if anyone's interested in flying to the final, we are running our own airline on Thomas Cook Airlines, and it'll only cost you £6,000 sterling to book the ticket, and it'll cost another £6,000 to get on the plane and another £6,000 to get to Kiev. So, and there's no guarantee of a match ticket, and there's no accommodation, but it is a bargain.
We still worth it if we win.
Yeah, absolutely. Still so what you need to do is you need to get in contact with Grizz or Steve O'Daly, and they'll give you the full details on how and on the plane that we're charging.
The bank details specifically.
Yeah, the bank details specifically, and your PIN number,
mother's maiden name, please as well.
Yeah, yeah. As ever, some of these things are tongue in cheek. Some.
I like it.
Right, listen. You've been watching, of course, the Tuesday Club. In it was Dave Thomas, as you're saying, we give him big off. He's off to watch the Welsh FA Cup with Gareth Bale and Cock Woodburn. And beside him was Ray Dicko Dickinson, the man who is annoyed at what's going on. And of course, beside me is the one and only Paddy, LL Paddy Lawson. Get on, follow him at LL Paddy L. That's why you're getting told what the full title is here. And remember, you can't, Paddy is life. If Sean isn't around, Paddy is like, that's all it is. Thank right?
Best in season signing we've made for a while, isn't it?
As I said, big thanks as ever to Redsbet for sponsoring us, and big thanks to Stoutman's for letting us do this at our temporary home while we reform and rebuild the bunker. Again, Jamie will be back with, I think Jamie's back with the tactics board this week. I'm not 100% sure, but I think as far as I know it is.
What's he tacticking?
No, we're starting as we
the
move,
FA Cup final.
As we move, no, as, I'll be honest with you, and people probably wondering what we're going to do. Obviously, we've got the World Cup coming up, so there's a look at this. But Jamie is going to be looking at, you know, in terms of the players, obviously with transfers, how they could impact us tactically, how they could impact the setup for what's going on,
new season team lineups, and all that,
and
sort
that
of stuff.
Type of stuff. And we're bringing in a lot of very well thought of and very well qualified coaches and stuff to become part of the tactics board. So we'll develop on further, and we'll be really
Buvach.
Yeah, as we start going. And the Buvach thing, we might be able to get a coach's view on potentially where Buvach is, but again, as far as I'm aware, it's a personal issue that's keeping him away from the club, which is quite sad in real terms. Anyway, listen, as ever, thanks again for watching. That was Ray, that was Dave, that was Paddy. I'm Phil, I'm your host. We'll be back, I think it'll be next Thursday as opposed to Tuesday, given everything that's going on. But we'll be back next week at some point. We are going to win the Champions League. This weekend is some nothing cup that actually holds nothing outside of John Motson's head and camel jackets that he wears, right? And he's retired. So if he's retired, they may as well just scrap the whole competition. Nobody gives a flying shite about it, right?
What time is it? It's like stupid time, isn't it? It's not even a traditional time again. Is it quarter past five?
Who's even in it? Like, genuinely, who's playing in it? Anyway, that's as much as I care about. So listen, thanks for watching. Good night. And God
as long
bless.
As we don't win it, who cares?
But once we aren't in it, I'm happy. I'd rather be in the Champions League final than some fucking FA Cup final. What is it? Is it even on this weekend? Yeah, is it on this weekend?
It is.
Yeah.
But isn't your man getting married to your one?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And is that going to happen before the final?
I think
or after
they had
the
a raffle to see who hosts.
Like, you've got
cup.
A wedding on the day of the Champions League final, don't you?
Yeah.
And do you reckon that they'll stop the royal wedding for the FA Cup?
No, they won't. They'll be in full swing.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
We had to bring in big screens and all into the ballroom.
Imagine the Queen eating our dinner looking at the match.
Meghan Markle is a huge fan of Aston Villa, from what I heard.
Aston Villa?
They're in the final, aren't they? And Daley Atkinson.
Paul McGrath,
Steve Staunton. Paul playing away. Then the FA Cup final would have meant something. And there was some time traveller at the match as well at the weekend. Some lad out of the 90s was in the cup. He's going back to tell them all about how Man City's winning the Premiership. And the nobody's like, you're fucking nuts. They're in the fourth division. Then they said, bet they had a full stadium. No. It just doesn't make any sense. But they have a full stadium. Doesn't matter. They're all gone. Anyway, listen, again, thanks for watching on the tour.
He's lost the plot.
And again, we'll be back at some stage next week. The Fatback Four is back on Sunday. And of course, the Tactics Board is back on Friday with Jamie and the lads. So keep on watching. And we will do stuff over the summertime. We're going big on the World Cup. But yeah, I'm your host, Phil. Good night. God bless. Talk to you next week.